I'm trying to figure out if this is the best thing I've ever seen or what makes Americans and America hated by the rest of the country. Have you seen this video, Bill, of the Alabama strength coach?
No, I've not seen that one.
Jen, what about you? Have you seen this video on the Twitters, on the social media?
I have not.
This guy, Scott Cochran is his name, apparently recently in the locker room of Alabama, took last year's runner-up college football playoff trophy, the runner-up national championship trophy, takes it over his head and slams it straight down on the ground and then takes a sledgehammer to finish off the job.
Had a similar situation to that. It didn't quite inspire, but my senior year at Lexington, we had lost the little Lake Murray tip-off the prior year, our junior year, mm-hmm. and so we're going to play for the Lake Murray tip-off, and Bailey Harris, who's a pretty mild-mannered guy, actually, we're in the locker room before the game, and he pulls out the runner-up trophy from the year before, like right before the beginning of the game, and slams it in the trash can. And we all looked at each other like, wait, we did win that last year. You know, like.
So, and but the question is, how did that year's tournament turn out?
We lost.
Oh, man. That's a
we bummer. Got another one. We put it in the trash can.
Another runner-up trophy? That is too bad.
When I never forget,
I was really hoping for the inspiration.
We were playing the Lake Murray Tip-Off Classic. I sat on the bench, of course. Didn't participate. Got a DNP.
Okay, coach's decision.
Coach's decision. But as I've seen that happen before, it takes me back to my childhood days of, yep, that was an entertaining moment.
So to me, in my head, I see this as striving for excellence on one side of my brain, and the other side I just hear, what is it, Talladega Nights, Ricky Bobby's Ricky dad Bobby. Telling him second place is the first loser, and now what a terrible mindset that is.
And all you can imagine is, like, I'm sure there was like an office overlooking the weight room, and that where it took place.
I'm sure.
Nick Saban standing there with his hands in his pockets, nodding.
In the shadows in the background, or like moving his fingers together evilly.
Puppet master, yeah, you know. Exactly.
Arms, I like that better. Arms crossed, standing there nodding with two other people behind him. Yes, this is how it's all supposed to work.
You can check that out. I have retweeted that thing on my Twitter there, at TimHill1075. Welcome into the Friday edition. Short week for us, and I'm guessing a short week for you as well, with the holiday start this past Monday, which was just an extravaganza of college football. It certainly worked out well for the Gamecocks, and it looks like, Bill, correct me if I'm wrong on this line of thinking. You got 15 minutes and a quarter. The Gamecocks scored with 2:23 left, I think, in the third quarter. That was the first touchdown of the ball game when they bust the run there and get the touchdown and make it 19-9. So up until that point, it was 19-3. Michigan was well on its way to going up 26-3, it looked like, until they just fumble the football, give it over to the Gamecocks on like the 3-yard line, and then Carolina goes back down and scores. Up until that point, so I'm going to do the math, 30 minutes plus at least 6 in that third quarter. So for 36 minutes, it looked like the offseason narrative for the 2017 season was going to be, yeah, it was a good year, no doubt. A lot of progress, just not the Gamecocks couldn't get to that next step and really have a signature win and be considered as a top 25 team, probably somewhere between 30 and 40, somewhere in there. But then, clearly there needed to be a change on offense. Someone was going to come in from the outside, and Will Muschamp was making a move because Kurt Roper couldn't get done, a guy on his staff in Brian McClendon, and never really called a game before, and it was a lot of the same stuff, very little production against a good defense, but nothing to base any a lot of optimism on moving to the future on offense, especially without a big change. And then everything changed. 23 unanswered points for the Gamecocks. Carolina wins the football game, finishes 9-4, beats a Michigan team that was number 3 in total defense going into the ball game. Brian McClendon goes from an absolutely unproven offensive coordinator who couldn't do anything in the game to a guy who was aggressive and capitalized on turnovers and led the Gamecocks to an upset victory, the Big Ten's only loss in the bowl season, and gave Will Muschamp enough ammunition to make him a full-time offensive coordinator. And it looks like That's what's going to happen in about 4 hours and 20 minutes from now. There's a press conference scheduled over at Williams-Brice, and Will Muschamp will be talking today. We'll be bringing it to you live right here on 107.5 The Game. We're expecting right. Brian McClendon to be named the full-time offensive coordinator for the Gamecocks.
Yeah, I will say, if it's not Brian McClendon, you talk about an all-time shocker. That would be like the wrestling good. What is it? Good guy turned heel all of a sudden. Or, you know, it looks like the good guys are about to win, and all of a sudden, a guy slams a chair over somebody's head, and turns out he's the bad guy. That would be somewhat similar to kind of a shocking development today. Yeah, we expect Brian McClendon. I think the off-season narrative did not change with the final 20 minutes of that football game. 20, I think you said 25, but the final 20 minutes, 25 minutes, however you want to label it, the offseason narrative did not change in terms of South Carolina's offense is going to define the 2018 season, whether it's you, I, Brian McClendon, or Steve Spurrier running it, whoever gets named today. One of those choices was logical, the other three are not.
Oh, but wouldn't that be amazing, though?
If you and I come,
hey, boys, I'm back. Who needs quotes?
Only we'd be upstaged if Ted Renson, Ted, our caller Ted, and
that's actually what I was thinking. Was it Ted or you and Ted are sharing the
come out? There's
Bill
two
and Ted's excellent press conference.
Yeah, there's two chairs on either side, and we come out of the because the way he does it, there's a door on the right and a door on the left.
You guys come out with your guitars in the smoke like they do in the movie.
He comes and Muschamp says, "I've hired new coordinators," and we come out, we sit down on either side of him, but
and the booze ensue.
From the media, no less, right. Not even the fans.
No, the media would eat it up. Are you kidding me? Standing ovation. Muschamp's explanation. You know, I've changed how I look at things.
I don't listen to the radio. Sorry, I apologize.
One day I was actually listening to the radio, and I heard a compelling argument, and now it has led to this.
Took me making a phone call. those guys really weren't doing much. It was easy to find them. It's just, I think the offseason narrative from whomever is going to be the change in office, because I think one thing that's going to also happen today that we've talked about, Travaris Robinson, I believe, will be announced with a significant raise, close to a million, if not slightly over a million. But I think most people believe that even next year the defense will be again improved over a defense that was improved from 2016 to a defense that was very good in 2017 and so forth and so on. So I think the narrative is going to be, okay, the offense is what takes this from being a middle-tier SEC team to top of the league, to competing with Georgia for the SEC Eastern Division Championship. And so I don't think that last 20 minutes really changed the narrative. I think it made people happier, because if they'd have lost, I think that maybe people would be a little bit more disenfranchised, disgruntled with this hire.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that that 20 minutes would change people going, okay, I'll at least see what he's got.
So are you telling me that if the final score is 26-3, Brian McClendon still gets hired today? I find that difficult to believe. You think about that. We're just getting warmed up here. It's Friday morning.
Take your time.
Yeah, take your time with that.
Thank you for
take
that.
Take it all in.
We'll I've been prepping for a press conference. I meant.
Good point. Don't let. Come on. This is all closed. You got to change your mindset now if you're going to be joining the staff. This probably will be the last time I ever talk to you.
Yeah, this could be it. Ted won't call in this morning. He's busy. He's getting our wording. I'm not supposed to be opening about this.
803-404-6100, the number end of the program, the Love Chevrolet phone lines. We'll get a Frank's Discount Tire poll question up and rolling. At Tim Hill 107.5 on Twitter. He's at Will Gunter with one L. Have you seen this thing about Tom Brady and Bill Belichick? The Patriots, it's the NFL playoffs start this weekend, and reportedly, there's a big rift between the legendary head coach and his legendary quarterback. I find this to be very interesting, especially knowing that we're going to find out more information about the Gamecocks offense and where it goes, and how do we evaluate that? How do we evaluate the job that Brian McClendon has done, and then how will we evaluate what happens next year? Because I'm all about the results. And ultimately, it's all about wins, not stats. 9 wins this year was a great year for the Gamecocks. How do you now evaluate the offense moving forward and Will Muschamp moving forward? I asked Bill before the break if the Gamecocks don't come back against Michigan, score 23 unanswered points to win the ballgame 26-19, Brian McClendon's only game in college football calling the plays, can Will Muschamp go to the podium today, like we're expecting him to do at 10:30 at Williams-Brice Stadium, and say, this is going to be our guy running the offense moving forward? To me, it's an obvious no. He can't.
I think he could. I think he could, but I don't think he would. I mean, you could go there and say, look, it was one game, and we saw improvement in practice, and it was a number three defense in the country. I think you could go up there and do it. Here's what I don't know to answer your hypothetical question. Who are the other candidates? Who are the other candidates that were legitimate? Because my personal belief is that Eli Drinkwitz at NC State was not a legitimate candidate.
Looks from the outside to be a completely lateral move. Right?
Yeah, and I just don't think he was interested in it. Phil Longo at Mississippi landed Matt Corral, 4-star quarterback out of Venice Beach in California, and you could kind of say I don't think he was a legitimate candidate. So the question when you say okay, if it was 26-3, would he be going or could he? Yeah, he could, and I think you could go up there and look. People like me would say, okay, I don't mind the hire, and I think that it still resonates and works for me with a lot of different reasons. I said before the week, regardless of the outcome, that I thought McClendon should be the offensive coordinator. That wouldn't have changed in my opinion. Obviously, scoring in the method and the fashion that they did maybe validates him being the offensive coordinator, even though 10 of those points came from within 21 yards.
Mm-hmm. Off turnovers.
But to me, again, it's a hypothetical question you're asking, and one that we don't know the candidates. And yes, I do think he could go up there and do it. Would he? My guess, my gut would be no, he would not. He would, for perception point. Because I think there are coaches in this country who don't care about perception. I think there are coaches who do care about perception. I think as Dabo Sweeney was building Clemson, one of the things that he knew and tried to kind of focus on was perception of the program, always selling his program in the most positive light possible. Will Muschamp, to me, is also one of those guys who's going to come out and do whatever he can to sell his program to recruits. He doesn't care about the fans in that manner, but sell it to recruits in the most positive manner. And I think with Brian McClendon, he's able to go out and sell that really strong on the recruiting trail now.
I think that's very interesting that you brought up Dabo Sweeney, because if he doesn't beat Steve Spurrier and the Gamecocks in that first game, as a head coach, as an interim head coach, he doesn't get the job. There is no way. I think we all, if you go back and you rewind, whatever it is, a decade now, and remember who Dabo Sweeney was as interim coach taking over Tommy Bowden, there was not a lot of support there to begin with. But he gets that win. To me, that game has now changed the entire complexion of college football in the state of South Carolina, for sure. You could argue in the country right now. It's just really interesting to me how much one game's results, and in this case with Brian McClendon, this is one quarter and not even a half maybe, the result has now led to a future that is drastically different than it would have been otherwise if the results would have been different. That's just how I see this thing moving forward. It's going to be really interesting to hear from Will Muschamp today. If I'm not expecting to get a ton out of him about his thought process and who else he talked to, and he's going to do what you just said. He's going to sell this to recruits moving forward. But he also does have to sell it to the fan base to some degree, I think. And his sales job got a lot easier with the final quarter plus against Michigan, for sure. Now it's a matter of what else do you sell out there? What plan do you put out there, or how much do you reveal of that? I think there is some of that needs to be done from a recruiting standpoint, and certainly not the fans aren't going to be number one, but that does matter. I mean, ticket sales do matter. We saw at Florida, the fan base was unenthused towards the end of Will Muschamp's tenure, and that was a big part of them parting ways with him, because the administration still liked him and the whole thing, but he had lost the fan base there. So it is a part of this thing moving forward. I'm going to be interested to hear exactly kind of the vision of this thing moving forward. But again, Brian McClendon, if you're unfamiliar with the resume, a Georgia wide receiver and then a relatively long time Georgia assistant coach, was the interim coach there when Mark Richt left before Kobe Smart came over.
Was also passing game coordinator. I don't know if that matters. I don't know just to give him another title.
But we come from the background of Steve Spurrier being here, and literally in the press conferences, this guy, what's his title? We're calling him the run game coordinator. Yeah. And then he laughs, basically, because they just admitted here when he was here, you have to do that to give the guy a raise.
Right.
So I think we have a certain perspective of that. But you're saying that was his technical
he did,
title
he did
here,
have
right?
One
He's
of those,
the co-offensive right. coordinator technically under Kurt Roper here the last couple of years. If we all saw that as a 50-50 partnership, I don't think there's any way he gets the job, right?
Right.
Because then he would get more blame for the lack of production we've seen for the Gamecock offense, especially this year. You can give him a pass in year number one. I get that. But this year particularly, it's going to be really interesting because I don't think we've seen another big boy program do this, Bill, in recent memory. We were talking about examples of other hires. There's been the big-time splashy hire in LSU going out, paying Matt Canada $1.5 million, and I've seen they're working out a settlement now of more than $3 million to get him out of there. We've seen a guy like Mike Gundy go on the internet and hire someone from Division II that is completely unproven, and we've seen maybe the middle of that. The Penn State example is the best one that I think that relates to the Gamecocks, where they had decent seasons but finished over 100th in a lot of offensive categories, so they felt like they needed to make a move. They went and hired a Fordham University head coach in Joe Moorhead, who parlayed 2 years of tremendous success now to an SEC head coaching job over at Mississippi State.
To me, if it is McClendon, to me, it's the safe hire. It's the because Muschamp knows. What I find interesting about this is in the past, Muschamp's gone outside. When he hired Roper, not the second time, but the first time, it was going outside of the program. When you hired Brent Peace outside of the program, he knows McClendon. I mean, he's worked with McClendon now for 2 years. He's got an idea of what Brian McClendon might want to do offensively. Like, I feel like this is the safe hire, and I feel like Brian McClendon, having watched Kurt Roper, should know the things not to do and the areas not to go down the path, not to go down. I think it's the same. I think it's a good hire. I will find out. We're assuming that that's the guy who will be announced at 10:30 today. Maybe we'll hear about other. Again, there is technically, I guess, if you hire McClendon, then there's technically another spot open. Or I say if you hire McClendon, if you technically promote McClendon, there's another spot to fill if we hear about that today. And then if he goes ahead and announces the 10th assistant as well.
I'm guessing it seems like most staffs out there who have made hires and they do this without everybody in place, you'll hear that particular assignments on the coaching staff have yet to be made. I would assume we'll hear that to some extent, but maybe Will Muschamp will lay out the complete plan for us at 10:30 today. Again, you can hear it right here on 107.5 The Game, live from Williams-Brice Stadium. This has led us to ask you the Frank's Discount Tire poll question today. How do you feel about Brian McClendon running the Gamecock football offense? You got four options at Tim Hill 107.5. Thrilled, trusting it will work, wait and see, or disappointed. Mark weighing in via the Shepherd's Shepherd's Glass inbox this morning. Says success is sustainable, maybe not at 11 wins per year, if you replace departed assistants with quality hires and maintain your recruiting. We did neither toward the end of the Steve Spurrier era, is what Mark is saying there. And I think we talked about that multiple times on the program. You mentioned Brad Lawine on the defensive side of things. Shane Beamer has been mentioned kind of on the recruiting side of things for the Gamecocks. A couple of key assistants under Steve Spurrier who it was noticeable, their absence towards the end of the tenure, especially. I understand Beamer left right before Jadeveon Clowney got on the field for the Gamecocks, so certainly that was able to be covered up for a significant period of time. But I think he was credited with really the foundation of recruiting, and that took a big hit eventually towards the end of the Spurrier era.
He and Jay Graham. I mean, I think you look at Jay Graham, and I mean, you didn't lose. Plus, you lost Craig Fitzgerald, who the strength. I mean, that staff almost got gutted when you think about Graham and Fitzgerald, Beamer, Brad Lawing, Ellis Johnson.
Which, by the way, is just a sign of success. Right, that happens everywhere. That's one of the reasons we talk about Mike Gundy, an offensive coordinator, going to the internet and doing a search. He got so frustrated that his offensive coordinators kept getting poached consistently. He's like, I'm going to get a guy nobody wants, because he doesn't have a reputation out there. And he went to Division II Shippensburg University and got Mike Yurchich, who has been mentioned on this program as a likely candidate for an offensive coordinator job at South Carolina. It's simply because of what he's done at Oklahoma State. So I understand where he's going with that. Lee Hogan weighing in on the Shepherd's Glass inbox as well. He says, BMAC is maybe our top recruiter. If we hire Werner, we bring in a top quarterback coach with a lot of knowledge and experience on that side of the ball. And that's what I was mentioning about what would seem to be, or certainly be sold as, an excellent marriage of experience and youth and a good combination moving forward for the Gamecock offensive side of the ball. Because Kurt Roper was relatively experienced as an offensive coordinator, maybe not tremendously, but experience was an issue with him. Certainly, you question Brian McClendon's lack of experience because he hasn't called games as an offensive coordinator on any level, but much less an SEC level, has been a longtime SEC assistant, so there is experience there, just not as a coordinator per se.
Well, I think if you bring in Dan Werner, again, you're kind of, you're surrounding him with people who you think are creative offensive minds. And I think the big difference is, and I'm not trying to knock Kurt Roper, but the big difference is from what we've heard, I think you've heard the same thing because we hear the same things, is that Kurt Roper was it's my show, I'm doing it my way. If I want your input, I'll give it to you. You know, he was doing it he was not going to go out and solicit a whole lot of opinions from others. I think Brian McClendon's going to be totally different in that manner, and that he's going to go to Bobby Bentley, if it is Dan Werner later today, or Larry Scott is another name we've heard mentioned. And look, not trying to say Tennessee's offense this year was the end-all be-all of offenses, but they did have a freshman quarterback in Jared Garantano. But if Larry Scott's the guy, again, you put another offensive mind next to Brian McClendon. And I think going into that meeting room, Brian McClendon will be more than willing to ask around and go, okay, how do we game plan, or how do we utilize, or in a game, what are you guys seeing that we need to maybe adjust or make a change to?
Let's get out to the Love Chevrolet phone lines now, 803-404-6100. Mike weighing in on the offensive coordinator position. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, guys. Isn't any hire you do a risk? I mean, a few years ago, there were some people upset, thought Muschamp was a risk. You know, Mark Richt wasn't when he got Georgia's job, he wasn't a proven coach. Kirby Smart was a coordinator. How do you know what's going to be good? I don't have a problem with McClendon being, because I know one thing. Any coach is going to be better with players, and he is no doubt going to get us better players, him being here, than not being here. So a lot of it is coaching, a lot of it, but we have got to get some more players here, and I don't think it does anything but hurt us if Brian McClendon is not here, because he is definitely going to help us recruiting, and I think that's at least 50% of the game. So what do y'all guys think?
Mike, you're exactly right. You put it a little bit differently than I would. I wouldn't say every hire is a risk, but certainly the outcome is unknown, right? We don't know what would happen if Chad Morris were to get hired for the Gamecocks offensive coordinator job. We would have a good idea based on his prior offensive production that it would go well, and it would be seen as a much less risky hire than maybe a guy who hasn't been an offensive coordinator before. I just think that's how I see this thing, is there are percentages, right? Mark Kingston is a pretty unproven guy when it comes to SEC baseball coaching. The risk of hiring him as opposed to Kevin O'Sullivan, or Brian O'Connor from proven national championship programs certainly is much higher, the risk.
Right.
But also, you pay him a lot less. There are a lot of other factors that go into it. That's where we are, I think, moving forward. That's why we're asking you, how do you feel about Brian McClendon running the Gamecock football offense? Trusting it will work, continues to lead the way. Wait and see in second place right now, and thrilled gaining a lot of traction in a solid third place over a few disappointed votes this morning so far through our number one. Looking forward to seeing how this thing continues to evolve. Again, expectations to me is a really interesting thing. Evaluating offensive coordinators, I think a lot of easy ways to do it is total yards. Where do you rank in total offense? I don't think it's necessarily fair to do that under Will Muschamp because of the parameters I think he gives his offensive coordinator, even though he'll tell us that he gives them none and it's complete autonomy. It's going to be interesting to see how Brian McClendon gets evaluated. Ultimately, it comes down to how many wins the Gamecocks will have next season. More than 120 votes in already. 48% of you going with trusting it will work. That leads the way over a close vote for second place right now between thrilled, which has 24% of the vote, and wait and see, which has 21% of the vote. 7% of you weighing in right now with disappointed in Brian McClendon running the Gamecock football offense. I'm not a little surprised. I am very surprised that wait and see is not leading the way in this thing. I thought there might be a little bit more skepticism. I think 23 unanswered against a number 3 ranked Michigan defense in the Outback Bowl certainly plays into that. Mm-hmm. And also just general optimism, I think, after a 9-4 season. The part where I'm a little surprised is that the track record with Will Muschamp and the offensive coordinators haven't followed that. Let's get out to that Love Chevrolet phone line right now. Sterling's been waiting very patiently to weigh in on the offensive coordinator situation at South Carolina. Good morning, sir.
Morning, fellas. How y'all doing?
Doing good.
All right. Honestly, fellas, I don't have a problem with Brian McClendon being offense coordinator. I'm actually kind of excited about it. I mean, we saw what happened when Spurrier, you know, gave up on recruiting, you know, and if I'm correct, when Muschamp brought in Lance Thompson and McClendon and Tavares Robinson, all of them respectively had been ranked as number one recruiters by different sports sites or whatever,
right,
as far as being great recruiters. I mean, you got to think, McClendon's been on the sideline at Georgia. I mean, to think that he hadn't been sitting there, you know, with plays in his head that he might have wanted to run or different ways, directions he might have wanted to take an offense. You know, I mean, he's been sitting there for a while. So I'm optimistic and feeling that the man's got a lot of plays and a lot of stuff that he would want to do his way. And as you said, Roper was kind of my way, you know, no input from anybody. That's where I see McClendon being a little younger and possibly, you know, willing to take input from Bentley or input from any outside source. So as far as McClendon goes, I'm all for it. I'm one of the most diehard Gamecock fans you'll meet, so it's going to be hard to find negative stuff for me to say. But, you know, just letting him get into the fold of things and get used to things. I'm not worried about the first three quarters. How he finished the game is what I was more impressed with. So I'm all for McClendon, fellas.
We'll give Sterling a thrilled vote officially on the Frank's Discount Tire poll question. Moving forward, what percentage do you feel like is out there with that mindset?
I don't know how many people are thrilled. Because after the Clemson game, you said, okay, who are we going to hire? Who are we going to hire? I don't think McClendon's name was at the top of the list. Now, with that being said, I think it's what Sterling just said, and I think that's the mindset of a lot of fans. Brian McClendon's a good recruiter, and you're putting him in a role now where his recruiting can affect a lot of different positions by saying, this is how I'm going to utilize you. The first guy I look at is Quavarius Crouch, who South Carolina has had on campus multiple times and, again, has some connections and is legitimately in Canada. This is going to be, again, one of the top three recruits, not at his position, nationally. Crouch is going to be one of the biggest names out there in the recruiting cycle.
Running back from Charlotte.
Running back, 6'3", about 220. Actually was wearing – he plays at Harding University in Charlotte. And
Harding University High School?
Yeah, I think that's
just the – Harding High School, I think.
I think it's – I'll look. I'm on it. He's going to be a guy. As a matter of fact, played in the state championship game and ended up wearing South Carolina gloves during the game. That was a big deal. Everybody was very excited, it's one of those things. But
Harding University High School.
Did you get that,
dude? We got this right here. How many times do you want to play?
Got me.
I can get whatever you need.
Yeah, but I've never heard him say you're right.
Oh, jeez.
You cannot be serious.
I don't know if I'm going to say anything else for the rest of the show.
I got a lot of work to do here, I guess.
Now, I definitely haven't heard that. I don't think I'm not going to say anything else for the rest
of the
show.
I think that Brian McClendon will be on the recruiting trail. I think the opportunity to go out and to be able to sell his vision to his recruits and other offensive recruits will actually be a plus here. But I don't think, to go back and finish that thought, I don't know if anybody necessarily is going, yes, okay, McClendon. Now we're ready to go and compete for the SEC with McClendon. This is the offensive mind that we were looking for. I'm a little surprised you said, what's that right now? I'm surprised there's not more of a wait and see type approach. And look, again, we get to that Coastal Carolina game. He doesn't put up, 35 points, 40 points?
Mm-hmm.
Be a little bit different right after that.
24% of the vote right now going to thrilled, 21% going to wait and see, and 48% of you saying trusting it will work. That's where our early results are on this poll question right now. Mentioned it earlier. To me, I don't think this hire would have happened if the Michigan game turned out, if it had ended how it started. If the Gamecock offense never got a gear.
Let's change that narrative. If they score one touchdown.
Right.
Let's say they lose 19-9. Nobody else ever scores.
At the time, Rico Dowdle's touchdown, I thought that was going to be a touchdown of respectability.
I think a lot of people thought that, yeah. Heath and I were kind of debating that at the time.
I still don't think it would happen. I don't think it happens without a win here. And, I mean, you even look at the numbers, and you talk about evaluating offensive coordinators, 300 yards of total offense. Now, you do have to keep in mind Michigan's defense was really, really good, number three in the country. So you probably give an offensive coordinator a little bit more credit for 300 yards against Michigan than you would against Northwestern or another Big Ten opponent in that ballgame. Yet, I think it's all about results with fans for the most part, right? 9-4, Real Muschamp's a really good coach. Right, they lose a bunch of these games where they're 10-3 in close games. Will Muschamp pointed that out, I think, after this game. You go 3-10 in those games. Will Muschamp, not a good coach. Right. The fact that Carolina won the game gives Will Muschamp the opportunity to make this move where I don't think he would. He would have had the opportunity, obviously. It's his program. He could have done it. Mm-hmm. I don't think he would have been likely to do it because of the public perception of this thing and how well-received someone else from the outside would have been, because you could go to stats. You could say, look what he's done previously, and they're going to change things. And change, most people perceive when things haven't gone well beforehand, no matter what. Change is good. Obviously, we know the results of that aren't necessarily in line with that line of thinking, but that's how it works from a PR standpoint. So it's my contention that if that game had not have ended up in Carolina's favor, this move would not be happening today, much like if Dabo Swinney had not beat Steve Spurrier in his final game as interim coach at Clemson. Clemson could not have made the move to make Dabo Swinney their head coach, and college football as we know it would be completely different.
Oh, the old butterfly effect, huh? I think here's the question. Again, here what you're posing – with Clemson and Dabo Swinney, there were other options. One of the options of which was Will Muschamp, who was widely – Clemson fans wanted to bring Will Muschamp to Death Valley at that time to be their head coach. We don't know the other candidates. Again, whether he interviewed some people, whether he'd been turned down, whether he had – we don't know what the pool of candidates.
So
because that to me is a big part of this. Now,
if Will Muschamp didn't interview any other candidates, that's a gross negligence of his job.
No, I don't think you have to interview anybody. I think when you say interview, to me, that's sit down and talk with them. I think you can watch film. You can watch what Brian McClendon did. I thought Brian McClendon's interview, so to speak, was more about bowl prep and what those players were doing. Sure. I thought it was less about the game. I think a lot of us, I think on our program, Perry Orthone. I know I had Brad Crawford on as well. I think it was on Heath's program before Christmas when I was having to fill in for him. And I had Perry when Perry was on, and the general agreement was you can't judge whether it was 26-3 or whether it was 26-19. It didn't matter. You couldn't judge Brian McClendon on one game. Now, obviously, the positive, if he goes out and has a great offensive game, the positives far outweighed the negatives. But it felt like the negatives, people going, well, you can't because of how good Michigan's defense is, you cannot judge Brian McClendon based on one 60-minute game of play calling. And look, I think it was good. There was things I liked. There's a lot of reasons that I think Brian McClendon should be the offensive coordinator. We still don't know what he's going to be, and we're not going to know after the Coastal Carolina game. I think it's the Georgia game before you really have a good feel for who Brian McClendon is as a play caller and how that offense is going to function.
Interesting opinions via the Shepherd's Glass inbox this morning. John Lott says, a Mac actually showed against Michigan that he's willing to change things up if what he's calling isn't working. Roper just seems stubborn at times, and Bentley seemed to improve with the adjustments. David Waite's weighing in with the exact opposite mindset, it looks like. BMAC is a Roper apostle. He will be Muschamp's sinking ship just like Florida. Our defense won us the Michigan game. Roper would have won that game. Well, I think that's wildly a mischaracterization of Brian McClendon and his coaching career, because he only coached with Kurt Roper for 2 years at South Carolina. I mean, if you're going to call him an apostle of anybody, it would be Mark Richt, I would assume, because that's who he spent the most time with, and the Georgia program is clearly where he's been. I mean, maybe Mike Bobo. You could call him a Mike Bobo apostle because he probably spent more time with him as an offensive coordinator than anyone else. And we don't know how that thing would have turned out if Kurt Roper was the offensive coordinator, right? That would be the really interesting thing to be able to do in a hypothetical world, is to have the two different games lined up to each other and see how the Gamecock offense would have reacted under Kurt Roper had he had been calling the plays, and how it reacted under Brian McClendon instead.
And I said, Rob tweets in on the Shepherd's Glass Twitter inbox and said, the Gamecock offensive line is already average, so then you go up against an elite defense and Donnell Stanley is out and Zach Baylor's 50%. That's your two best offensive linemen by far. McClendon was already behind the eight ball without them. I think that's the other thing for next year. And I said this, look, I don't think Kurt Roper was this great offensive mind, but next year I think the offensive line is going to be better. I think next year Jake Bentley is going to be better. You just a natural progression. I think next year your wide receivers, you get Debo Samuel back. Brian Edwards is a junior. Shai Smith and Ortre Smith are sophomores. They'll have a year in the system in spring ball and fall camp to go through, and you'll add a guy like Josh Van, and I'm leaving out a guy like Chad Terrell. The running backs, I think the offense as a whole, a year more experience for a lot of players. I think Brian McClendon is going to benefit. Look, I don't want to compare him to Lorenzo Ward. That's not what I'm trying to do here, but Lorenzo Ward benefited because the defense got better after Ellis Johnson left. You added a few more playmakers. Now, those guys cycled out.
I mean, defense got more talented, right?
They were the first year Lorenzo Ward called the defense, they were really good. Right. But then those players started to cycle out. I don't anticipate that happening, but what I do anticipate is the offense as a whole being more talented, being better. Another year under Jeff Dillman. I think the offensive line another year under Eric Wolford. Look, I'm not saying that Brian McClendon can be awful and the offense will still be good, but I think that the offense is going to have some talent, some playmakers, and be better next year when you factor in that they'll have a year's worth of experience. And again, I think the offensive line, next year is one of the years I'm going to look at the offensive line and go, this should be a really good group, even losing Allen Knott and Corey Helms.
Mm-hmm. So that's where Gamecock football sits. And again, 10:30 this morning, we'll have a press conference over at Williams-Brice Stadium. We also had the first weekend of the NFL playoffs. Robert just hit us up on the Shepherd's Glass inbox, taking exception with your line about not being very excited about spring football. He thinks you're excited about anything football, hence the Maction. So my question to you is, what about the first round of the NFL playoffs? To me, I'll certainly watch every single game, probably to some extent. I don't know how invested I'm going to get in any of these games besides the Panthers and Saints. I'll probably watch that one from beginning to end.
It's a big weekend at my place. I'm de-Christmasing the house. It's time we get the Christmas tree out. The ornaments have got to come down.
It is January 5th.
And tomorrow will be the 6th. I mean, that seems about appropriate, January. Okay. And got to get all the Santas up.
Jen, what about you at your house?
I've got about half of it down.
Okay.
Just haven't been real super motivated.
I was surprisingly impressed at my house. We're done. It crushed the 2-year-old when he woke up. We didn't prep him for it.
Oh, no.
He was like, where's it? Because he kept thinking that every morning he was waking up, he's like, it's Christmas. Because the Christmas tree is there and there's toys
waiting,
up there.
Yeah. That's right.
So he's awfully confused. And then it just wasn't there one day. Poor kid. He got over it in about 10 minutes, though.
Yeah, probably.
That's I got to figure out what to do with the Christmas tree. I never figure out whether to take it to the
grinding of the
greens. Or take it up to the lake, get a place up in Prosperity and sink it, and then allow it to be a brim bed, and then, you know, in the spring, go back up or the summer and tangle a bunch of fishing line in there trying to catch brim.
Oh. Well, if you need more, let me know.
I'm good. One.
Help you out.
Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, and Robert Kraft. The article on ESPN.com entitled The Beginning of the End for the Patriots. Really interesting stuff. And it's talking about Tom Brady's personal weight training coach, or what, I don't even know what he's calling himself necessarily. But the release of this book recently, The TB12 Method, and I guess Brady has opened up his own training facility, and now it's the way this article reads, it's been a power struggle between the Patriots and Brady about who players should listen to more, kind of thing. And Tom Brady he subscribes to the theory of stretching and nutrition and taking a lot of your training that way, as opposed to the slightly more traditional ways, even though it's not. I think he's quoted in this article as saying, Bill Belichick just wants you to lift more weights and that'll solve everything. The Patriots as a team think that's a gross over-characterization or mischaracterization, but it's talking about young players coming in and they don't know who to train with or listen to more, the team doctors or Brady's guy, and the power struggle, and they're saying this is the beginning of the end because who deserves more credit, Brady or Belichick, and Robert Kraft in there as well. Really interesting article. To me, it's a bit overhyped, as most media articles are.
You also didn't give Tom Brady his credit for the TB12 method, nutritional method, or everything. You said it was his, but it's apparently he's copyrighted that. I didn't realize that till reading the article.
So it is his, right?
Well, like, it's, but it's not like an idea, like this is a formula or whatever for like how he wants to live his life, that now, like you said, it's like he's trying to pass on to other Patriots. Because what you just said, and we'll get into this, I think is fascinating, because it's more of like a lifestyle type thing, and Tom Brady's being like, yeah, other Patriots, you guys should be doing this with me. Ignore what he's saying.
Right, and that's part of the struggle, according to this article, and where Belichick and Brady are not seeing the same. Also, it mentions the Brady's blow-up with Josh McDaniels on the sidelines that we saw about, a month ago, maybe 6 weeks ago or so, and we've seen these before, and at the time, McDaniels just said that's part of what makes Brady great. Bill O'Brien had a famous one with him back in the day, similar type stuff. Yet this article is suggesting that there is much more of a rift than has previously existed with the Patriots. To me, it doesn't really matter very much when it comes to football this year, because the Patriots have been the gold standard. They have home field advantage in the playoffs, and they will be, to me, they're still where they are. And that continues to be, not talked about enough in the dominance that the Patriots are showing in this era of the NFL and parity and different champions. They are the only organization that continues to do it year after year.
Nobody should be surprised that there's a rift, right?
But is
you should
there,
be surprised.
But is there is my question. No, no, the surprise is that this hasn't developed sooner, right?
Okay.
Where it happens all the time. Well, I mean, what did the Carolina Panthers do after playing in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago? They went in the tank immediately. Right. And that's what most teams do. I mean, the Falcons clearly this year, not the same team they were last year, even though they did end up making the playoffs and they'll have a chance to beat the Rams this weekend. It's a really interesting article. I suggest that you check it out. But who would you side if you're a younger player? I mean, what an amazingly difficult choice if you're a young player going into the Patriots, right? If you're Stephon Gilmore, who walks into the Patriots this year for the first time, the former Gamecock goes in, and he's got Tom Brady on one side with his personal trainer saying, "Yeah, this is the way we think you should do things. Come on and work out with us. This is what I'm going to do." You got Bill Belichick in your other ear saying, "All right, listen to our doctors. They know what they're doing." And Gilmore has had some health issues, so he's had to do this personally this year. He's had to make his own choices. Really interesting situations. Ultimately, on the field, it doesn't look like it's had negative impact, a negative impact. What will happen, though, moving forward here? Will it affect the team at all? And can the Carolina Panthers avoid a third straight loss to the New Orleans Saints this weekend? They play the last game of the weekend in New Orleans at 4:40 on Sunday. Right now, New Orleans is a 7-point favorite going into that thing. Lots of opinions continue to flood in via the Shepherd's Glass inbox. Jimmy D says, "One game does not an offensive coordinator make, but the potential is there. Got to take a risk and give him a chance." Talking about Brian McClendon, who we're expecting to be told in about 2 hours from now at a press conference where Will Muschamp will be at Williams-Brice Stadium, and you can hear it right here on 107.5 The Game at 10:30. Brian McClendon expected to be named the offensive coordinator for the Gamecocks. Dennis Quinn, former Gamecock, weighing in via the Shepherd's Glass inbox as well. He hit me up on my email, tim.hill@cumulus.com. "If BMAC is named the offensive coordinator, it's a great hire. Was always impressed with his knowledge of the game when I attended his sessions at the high school coaches clinic. I applaud Muschamp for having the courage to make this hire," Dennis continues, "to give a young up-and-comer a shot. I promise if we did not make the move, someone else would have scooped him up. I know that some will not like the hire, but what was the outcome of Muschamp hiring offensive coordinators with experience? I'm excited to see BMAC put his stamp on this offense."
And that goes back. I'm with Dennis on that. I'm interested to see. I don't know if excited is the right word, but I'm interested to see where this goes and how it differs as well. I thought we saw a few small different wrinkles on Monday against Michigan. I'll be interested to see with an offseason to build. And then also, you've got some guys coming in or some guys coming back. You hope Rico Dowdle can get fully healthy. I don't know if we saw him truly healthy all season long. Now, all of a sudden, you kind of learn something with A.J. Turner. It'll be interesting to see how they incorporate Tyson Williams into that backfield. Jake Bentley with a year if somebody, I want to go back to that tweet, but somebody hit me up and said the best hire in all this was, it's Nick the Quick. Nick said, I think you just read it, about Dan Werner and being the best hire, the best hire out of all this. I think that's another part that will benefit Brian McClendon or would have benefited anybody, is Jake Bentley's got to take a step forward. Look, we can talk about it. Shai Smith got open on Monday afternoon. Most of the time this year, it feels like Jake Bentley's missed those throws. His sail overthrown him, has thrown him away or something.
I thought it was going to happen again, by the way.
Yeah, I'll be honest. From where I was sitting, and I watched it develop, and as soon as I saw him break, he got about two or three steps behind the DB, and you could see Bentley winding up, and I thought, he's not hit those throws all year. And sure enough, he goes and he does it.
Strike, and not just hit him. I also, even after he caught it, I expected him to be tackled before he scored a touchdown.
I thought he was going to just drop it, to be quite honest. I thought he was going to be so surprised he was hitting stride.
Believe he had finished the season with zero drops, by the way.
Shai Smith's a guy. Look, I think the talent is there for South Carolina to have a very good offense next year. And that's regardless of who's calling the play. So I don't think that there's not going to be a honeymoon year. Like, Will Muschamp came into a situation where he got a honeymoon year. He got that 1 year last year. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Brian McClendon's not going to get that. And I don't know how much Brian McClendon being able to recruit will necessarily save him, make people go, okay, well, this was a great hire when the season starts. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be the narrative. It'll be my narrative for the next 9 months. But when we get into the season, McClendon's going to have to produce and have game plans that take advantage of opponents' weaknesses.
And just to be clear, when Nick the Quick mentions Werner there, he's talking about Dan Werner, former Ole Miss offensive coordinator, quarterbacks coach. And that's not official either, just like this Brian McClendon stuff. We're expecting to hear more details about this at 10:30 this morning, obviously. But he's a guy who has been a very popular name and has gained a lot of traction as being the next offensive assistant to be hired as well, since the Gamecocks technically lose an offensive assistant in Kurt Roper. Also, they get the chance to hire another assistant coach. You mentioned it, you're expecting that to be another on-staff promotion earlier on in the program. You mentioned that.
Yeah, Kyle Krantz, who's been a defensive analyst for Will Muschamp, been with Muschamp since his days at Florida, went with him from Florida to Auburn and now to South Carolina. So he's got a good feel for what Muschamp wants, and I expect that what position he'll get on the defense. He's been working with the secondary. Not 100% sure where they'll put him in terms. I expect special teams, because Will Muschamp kind of mentioned getting Coleman Hutzler some help there, but in terms of what position Kyle Krantz gets, not real sure, but I do expect that to be technically the 10th assistant. It wouldn't surprise me if there's another coaching staff change as well down the line.
I'm a fan of internal promotions. I think that really is good for – what's the word I'm looking for here? It's certainly good for continuity. It's also good for just the environment around the team. The amount of enthusiasm that everyone has, knowing that that's a possibility, I think it's kind of an unspoken environment where if you excel, then you will get rewarded here. And it has happened before. Now, we've seen examples of it not turning out well, obviously, with the Gamecocks Lorenzo Ward at defensive coordinator. We've seen examples of programs who can do both. Clemson is a program that obviously going outside and getting Brent Venables, going outside and getting Chad Moore has worked really well from a coordinator situation, but it also has worked well for them from an offensive coordinator situation, elevating a guy in Jeff Scott and Tony Elliott to take over for Chad Moore. So it can work out both ways.
I'll also say this regarding if Dan Werner's the guy. People are talking about going out and hiring a guy that has experience doing this. Dan Werner has a lot of experience. He was the offensive coordinator one for Miami back in the early 2000s. The Miami passing game back in 2001, 2002. His quarterback then was Ken Dorsey. That was a pretty good group that he had. Obviously, they had a lot of talent, but Dan Werner was the offensive coordinator for those guys. He was also, when he was the coordinator for Ole Miss, he took over in 2012. He turned around an Ole Miss offense that was ranked at or near the bottom of the SEC in every statistical category in 2011 to rank in the top five in the SEC and top 50 in the nation in scoring, total offense, and passing. And then in 2012, they averaged over 30 points a game. Bo Wallace was his quarterback. That was a very strong offensive group. That was 2013. You talk about adding a guy with experience, that's Dan Werner. Who's been an offensive analyst. There's an article that I pulled up just to make sure I was right about this. This is from December 8th of 2016. It says, it mentions that in a shocking announcement, this is coming off of the Ole Miss SB Nation website. It starts with, in a shocking announcement made Thursday, Ole Miss revealed that it had parted ways with a pair of key football assistants. Dan Werner will not return as co-offensive coordinator. So, again, you're talking about a guy who was doing really good things at Mississippi, and Hugh Freeze elected to make a change and go with Phil Longo. But you look at statistically, it's not like he was averaging 18 points a game and 300 yards of offense. They were doing pretty well. There might have been something else there with Werner and Hugh Freeze that caused them to part ways. So,
who knows what else was going on at that Ole Miss situation?
Right? Well, it does mention this. Now, I will say this for Dan Werner, from what I have learned of Dan Werner, unfortunate situation. His wife passed away while he was the co-offensive coordinator at Mississippi. He has two young kids. He's raising them. Anybody that kind of follows football recruiting knows that that's difficult. That's extremely difficult. It's a tough profession to be in when you're married and with kids. I imagine that situation. So I think there was a lot going on there in his personal life that he had to deal with. It's nothing bad, not like an alcohol problem or anything, but certainly trying to take care of his family, which I think we all understand. To me, Dan Werner, you talk about putting Brian McClendon with a kind of a proven offensive coordinator. That's a great guy to have in the meeting rooms, being able, not only from his experience, but his experience in the SEC, being at Mississippi, and then his experience this past year at Alabama.
Ian wants to weigh in now on the Love Chevrolet phone lines at 803-404-6100. Good morning, Ian.
Good morning. How you doing, fellas?
Doing good, man.
And, Tim, I think the word you were looking for earlier was morale.
Yes.
Good for morale.
Yes. Thank you.
But I just wanted to touch base on the McClendon calling plays in the Michigan game. You know, you guys have touched base on this, too. It was the number three defense in the country. And, you know, we did see a few wrinkles. You know, like something that we didn't see is on third and eight, we didn't see an inside zone. We saw a spread field. You know, that was excellent. And I just think that it's a really good hire. You know, it's young blood coming in there. He's already been a proven recruiter, all things that we've touched base on. But something that you guys just brought up, if we were to be able to bring in Dan Warner, and he would be able to, not so much mentor, because that's the wrong word, you know, McClendon would be the head honcho, but he would just be someone in there that would be able to be like, look, this right here, you know, whatever you're thinking of, this doesn't work against, you know, Bama, or like this, just someone to kind of have that fresh perspective along with McClendon's, you know, new, whatever he's going to do with the offense. I'm just really excited about it. I think that Muschamp's gotten a little bit of a bad rap with his previous hires. You know, like Kurt Roper was the best guy at the time. No one really was upset about it. And he was just like, okay, let's give him another fresh start at South Carolina. And it just didn't happen to work out. So, you know, I just wanted to hear y'all's thoughts on that. You know, we'll continue hearing that. I just think I'm really optimistic for the future, and I think we got a lot of pieces falling into place. Go Gamecocks, and y'all have a great day.
Thank you, Ian. Up in the morale here in the All-South Federal Credit Union studios with that call. I hear what he's saying, and I think most people took the same approach in the Outback Bowl to Brian McClendon because Michigan's defense was so good. And then, like Darren weighed in earlier on the Shepherd's Glass inbox saying, it wasn't necessarily the results he was looking for. It was more the plan or the approach or what they were actually trying to do, and that has him encouraged. I think a lot of people just in that very small sample size, and we all know it was very small, and you can't base an entire future of the offense in South Carolina on what happened against Michigan, but you got to give a guy the benefit of the doubt calling his first game against the number three offense. And the 300 yards of total offense means a little bit more when you're taking on a defense that came in ranked number three in the country. And it was as impressive as they were. And then also, though, on the other side of that, the 26 points, how much of that do you give credit to the defense forcing five turnovers and special teams, I guess it was, and scoring 10 points off of that almost directly? That's why this situation is so interesting to me, and that's why it reminds me so much of how people received the Will Muschamp hiring at the time. There was a lot of mixed opinions and a lot of people wanting to be really excited about it and yet having information that kept them from doing that to a large degree.
Yeah, I go back to that Michigan game, and you know, one of the plays that stood out to me was the third and two call at the 50-yard line where South Carolina kind of broke massive tendency. And they got Rico Dowdle out in the flat and threw a pass to him. And there was nobody out there, and Dowdle goes for 11 yards. I mean, you go back, that was the first drive for a touchdown. I think that that's, again, part of making some adjustments. We'll find out. You know, we'll talk about it for 9 months. We'll talk about it during the spring game. We'll talk about it all through fall camp. And it's we don't know what we're going to get, what Brian McClendon's really good, the changes he's going to make. And, again, if Dan Warner is indeed the offensive or becomes the quarterback's coach, we don't know the impact he'll have on it. And I think there's going to be I think it's going to be similar to what we saw this past year in terms of scheme and formations. I don't think you're going to all see South Carolina go to the Veer or the I formation or the, you know, a bunch of pistol looks or anything like that. I think the scheme's going to be the same. It's going to be the play calling that we're all interested to see and how he sets up plays or what he calls in certain situations to break tendency. Woods hits us up on Twitter, says asking about Bobby Bentley as the quarterback coach, because I talked about that and really like Bobby Bentley in that position. You know, I think Bobby Bentley, here's why I really like Bobby Bentley, because you can also hire Bobby Bentley as quarterback coach. You can also hire a running backs coach like a Dez Kitchens from NC State, I believe, and really enhance your recruiting. And so I think that, and plus I think Bobby Bentley's a really, really good quarterbacks coach. And the whole father-son thing, I don't think that should have bothered anybody. It's not like Jake Bentley staying for another 4 or 5 years and that was going to be a problem. That was, I think, kind of short-sighted if you were looking at it through those lens. But I think Dan Warner is a good – you look at his track record, working with Ken Dorsey, working with Bo Wallace, working with Chad Kelly. Obviously, he's got a good reputation as well, and I don't think that that's a bad hire. I just think from a recruiting standpoint – maybe moving Bentley and being able to hire a running backs coach, which is typically a recruiting position. You hire a strong recruiter for that, and Bentley has been a good recruiter so far when you look at what he's done. It would have been a great option as well. But I think Dan Werner, again, based on track record and what he's done, would be a solid hire.
Zero worries, R.A. Lace says on the Shepherd's Glass inbox, in putting my faith into three young coaching superstars, Muschamp, Robinson, and McClendon. I think it's pretty simple. As the offensive line play gets better and more consistent, the better the offense will be. How much stock do you put into that offensive line comment there at the end? I think the first thing he said makes a lot of sense, and I think gives Gamecock fans a lot of reason for optimism for the future. If you have Muschamp as your head coach and you have the two coordinators in Travaris Robinson and Brian McClendon moving forward, the future seems very bright in a lot of ways. The offensive line doesn't seem to be the key cog in all of this. I understand it needs to improve, and I think it certainly did to a large extent improve this year, but we didn't see the offensive numbers improve that much with improved offensive line play. Now maybe R.A. Lace is saying that if the offensive line can get back to more of a place where it was when the Gamecocks were 11-2 and one of the better offensive lines in the SEC, that's when you see the offense take the next step.
I'll say this. I think the offensive line, you look at a guy like Za'Darius Hutcherson who came in and played in that bowl game, filling in for Donnell Stanley and performed very well. You look at a guy that they're pretty high on in Eric Douglas. You should get Zach Bailey back. I don't know if he'll – that's another thing for a press conference today, if Will Muschamp announces anything on Zach Bailey and Rashad Fenton one way or the other, whether they're going pro. Although with Hayden Hurst, Muschamp was pretty clear that was his announcement. He wasn't going to ruin the moment. So maybe today he announces for the program that Bailey and Fenton are indeed coming back. But I think the offensive line next year, again, should be a strength of the program. I think another year in Jeff Dillman's system should pay off for him, and that Eric Wolford has changed the dynamics of that offensive line in just one year, and they should be a better group and should help significantly.
I think Emory Henderson probably put it up or sums it up best when we're talking about the offensive coordinator situation this morning and Brian McClendon, who we're expecting to become official at 10:30 this morning, and we'll hear it live right here on 107.5 The Game, the Will Muschamp press conference. But Emory says you can please some of the people some of the time, but you cannot please all the people all the time. I am pleased, Emory says. I believe, and I think that's where Gamecock fans for the most part are, and our Frank's Discount Tire poll question results kind of reflect that this morning, asking you simply, how do you feel about Brian McClendon running the Gamecock football offense? 43% of you, the number one vote getter this morning, trusting it will work, went with that. 22% of you going with thrilled on top of that. So that's 65% of the vote. Technically in second place today was wait and see, getting 28% of the vote, and 7% of you going with disappointed. Again, at Tim Hill 107.5, where you can vote on our Frank's Discount Tire poll question pretty much each and every morning. Wanted to mention the USC women's basketball team rolling in SEC game number 2 last night at Ole Miss. 5 Gamecocks in double figures. Asia Wilson leading the way with 25 points and 15 rebounds. 88-62, that final score. Up next, back on the road for the Gamecocks against number 15 Missouri Sunday, 2 p.m. Gamecock men's basketball back in action at home, Colonial Life Arena, tomorrow night, 6:45 against Vanderbilt. Carolina looking to bounce back from an 0-2 start in SEC play. Got to figure Vandy, one of the better chances they will have this year to get an SEC win.
Need something positive to happen. I'll be interested again to see the crowd, what happens there with the crowd.
Also, the fight and resolve. Frank Martin, after Missouri game, said his team didn't have any, and he saw it coming with a bad practice the day before. If that changes in this game, I think we'll go a long way in determining if the Gamecocks can be any kind of factor in SEC basketball play this year. Thanks for listening this morning. We appreciate all the feedback. See you at 10:30 over at Williams-Brice.